This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
I know that there's definitely a rivalry. I didn't realize that they felt that they were the second team in town. I never understood that. So that's the first I've heard that. I just look at it as a really cool thing. I mean, you know, rivalries, doesn't Notre Dame play Northwestern? Is that pretty solid around here too or not? No? Okay, I apologize for that.
I hated that the media was so quick to jump. I was in that room when that happened. Is Notre Dame and Northwestern rivalry? I'm a season ticket holder to Northwestern football. Yeah, I'm sitting there back. Yeah, it's a rivalry. Yeah, no, it's not a rivalry.
You would. When's the last time Notre Dame's been at Ryan Field?
Long time.
I have no idea. I'd love to go see that game, though.
Kitty Cats went down there and beat them, though.
That's right.
And they did it the Rose Bowl year, too. It's a rivalry.
That's right.
It's more of a rivalry almost than Cubs Cards. Lose that series every year.
I love that Joe Maddon will throw things out that he throw ideas out about, you know, Chicago and everything like that. And as soon as he realizes he's wrong, he's like, all right, no, that was wrong. All right, my bad. I'm learning. I'm fixing.
Well, that's because Gordon Whitmire's in the room and
it's true.
And you can't.
He's always there keeping him in check.
You can't mess with at GD Cub, who joins us now on Cap and Haw. Ain't that right, Gordon? Don't mess with you, right?
I think that's just to go back to the right. I think that's just Joe thinking outside the box with Northwestern Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, that is, and it's pretty far outside the box. I mean, that's as far outside the box as Joe's, you know, double steals and hit and runs whenever anything's going wrong. You know, Gordon, I'm wondering, you know, you wrote something. Let's see, I'm trying to find the dateline on this, and I'm confused. This was on the 8th, so a couple of 2 days ago here, and you referenced an interview right here on the Cap and Haw Show, so I'm really getting the double dip going on right now. Something that Crane Kenny said, you know, kind of vague comments about whether or not there'd be money for Theo to make a deal, and you did some background reporting on that after hearing it.
I did it before hearing it.
My mistake.
I had already done that reporting.
I apologize, my friend. So you've been on it for a while now, and I wonder if you could kind of explain the finance and the availability of funds should the Cubs want to go out and grab somebody. And I would imagine the impact would be on a big name, you know, like a Johnny Cueto or a Cole Hamels, or is it smaller than that?
Well, it's you know, when you hear Crane Kenny or anybody else get asked about whether there's flexibility to bring on salary for a trade, that's the wrong question to ask. Everybody has flexibility. Even Theo, in one of his public comments on this, when he said nothing, and he basically emphatically was saying nothing, said, yeah, we're like any team. Every team has flexibility, some more than others, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's true. So they've got flexibility to make him. Of course they do. They had flexibility to bring on Clayton Richard. What'd that cost? Nothing. So this is about whether they can or would go out and get a Jonathan Papelbon, whether they would spend the player capital in addition to the money it would take to bring on a Cole Hamels or another big name with a big salary. Even Jeff Samardzija, if the White Sox were willing to trade him to the other side of town. There's a guy making in the neighborhood of $10 million, so there's a few million prorated that you'd have to take on. The deal is they got a payroll budget when the season started. It's roughly the same as what last year's was, right around $100 million. The reason that the payroll itself is higher than that is because they stole from last year's to put toward this year's, and that allowed them to pay a lot of the upfront money on John Lester. And with between that and a couple salaries that fell off the books, they were able to do some other things with trading for Montero and bringing on $40 million and a couple of other things. So it's a bit of a puzzle and a shell game that they're playing to make this work as the team gets competitive. The thing is, they've spent a lot of that money that they saved up from the previous year. So the question is whether ownership is willing to add to that at this point, whether they can, because, I mean, people hate hearing this, but when they signed that deal with Sam Zell to buy the team, there were restrictions in place, mm-hmm. some bank restrictions on how they could spend relative to their revenues. So how much of that is still in place, especially after they took on minority investors and they've got the video boards up now? The baseball side of the front office isn't even sure whether that frees up much or any more for baseball spending in terms of what they're allowed to spend, what they're willing to spend, and then that's another question. Well, so as of now, they're dealing with the payroll budget they were given, and that leaves roughly $3 to $5 million left to work with.
So, Gordon, how does that affect, let's talk with Gordon Whitmire of the Sun-Times here, how does that affect the Cubs front office ability to sign guys like Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber, you know, whoever these guys, to sign them to some of the extensions, whether it's team-friendly or whether it's something, and I guess Mike Trout's extension is pretty team-friendly when you look at the value he's returning, but, you know, how does that affect their ability to do that?
Well, none of this is static, and you've got the ideal players when you're talking about those guys. They're cheap. They're minimum wage guys now, and they will be for a couple of years. So you've got this moving projection of where the payroll is going to go, and you're constantly playing it out. Even if nothing changed, you would theoretically have the ability to sign these guys to extensions or pay for their arbitration years, just because some other guys would fall off the books by then. So I mean, there's always those aren't issues. Because those guys are so cheap right now, and they will be for so long, that the idea that the end game in this is that your revenues are going to go up so high, they still haven't got that TV deal done. The real money on that theoretically kicks in at the end of the decade. So by then, that's when theoretically you're getting into big money payrolls and big money players again. The reason this is a story now is that this team is competitive basically a year ahead of schedule, even by baseball ops best projections. So never mind business ops, which has been at least a year behind baseball for two seasons now.
Yeah.
So the idea was that the two plans, business and baseball, were supposed to marry up at some point, and when baseball needed the money, it would be there. Now that's the question. Now the question goes to business ops. Are you going to support what baseball has so far accomplished?
Gordon Whitmire from the Chicago Sun-Times. Follow him on Twitter at GWCub. You could be his 15,544th follower if you follow right now. That's pretty good, Gordon. I judge everything by Twitter, Gordon. You're clearly winning on Twitter. Here's the question that you're talking about with bank restrictions and rickets. No Cub fan wants to hear when they're in the race that they have to be this creative to bring in a player. So, to soften that, I think, at least a little bit for the fan base, is it Ricketts would like to do it, but he can't because of the contract, or is it just him drawing the line saying, no, I'm not willing to lose money? Because I'm assuming it's the bank part.
Oh, he wouldn't lose money. I mean, they've made money since the day they bought this team. There hasn't been a loss anywhere unless they got creative with their books and claimed a loss somewhere. This has been one of the highest revenue teams in baseball from day one of Ricketts' ownership. Some of the promises and speculation and the start of the stadium construction has some of this stuff, bringing Theo in, has made the franchise more valuable along the way for sponsors and radio broadcast rights and things like that, so that the value of the franchise is gone up quite a bit too. So it's not about ownership losing money if they spend another $10 million on payroll. There's a little bit of a Rubik's Cube going on here with the finances. Now again, the answers I don't have. I knew some of this a couple of years ago about where it stood. Now how have the video boards and that revenue changed things? Supposedly that was going to be worth $30 to $40 million in new revenues. I don't know if that all kicked in this year, starting this year. Maybe it graduates, but that roughly that 30 to 40 is what the annual cost of interest and so forth on the debt had been. So even if that covers that, and you say, well, that's not baseball money, does that free up baseball money on the back end of that when you pay that? These are the questions that haven't been answered in action. We haven't seen it show up anywhere. This is a question that we'll find out whether they tell us or not over the next year or so when we see where baseball spending goes. And remember, this is not about, oh, they should do it. They should just go out and buy everything they can in their big market club and they should spend. That's not what it's about. It's about what the baseball operations wants to do and what they think is best to build on what they have. And if you look at their track record, they do tend to spend money. As a cost of doing business, as a cost of winning, they have tended to spend money throughout a decade of track record. And I know for a fact they've passed on several players along the way that just didn't fit what they were able to do with current budget and short-term projections.
Is James Shields one of those players?
James Shields is absolutely one of those players. He's a player who, by the time it got to February, had basically one suitor, and the opportunity to go after him fell into their laps. And at that point, it wasn't really anticipated. And then it became, well, how can we creatively do this? Padres gave him 4 years, $75 million. The Cubs were looking at a three-year offer for more per $60 million. And they needed to get very creative with it. They needed to make it shorter up front, backload it, and possibly do some other things within that contract. They didn't get it done. They fell just short. And they really fell short by only a few million dollars.
Yeah.
And my understanding from the people I talked to is they went to the wall as far as they could with trying to get creative in doing this. Remember, James Shields got off to a 7-0 start. He's had some bumps in the road since, but he got off to a terrific start. And could something like that, that would have elongated this rotation that's had so much trouble at the back end this year, had this team sitting at well over 10 games over 500 instead of struggling to even get to that point?
See,
you know, these are the dominoes that fall and lead to X.
This is why I like having Gordon on. He could make things like the Illinois budget less complicated for you. He could make sense out of that kind of stuff,
and
too.
I also think, before we go any further, it's important to note, people think that Gordon's got this huge beef with the Cubs. He's just being a reporter. There's no beef. He's been doing – how long have you been covering baseball now, Gordon?
This is 19 years.
Okay, so you get pretty numb.
As a beat writer.
You get pretty numbed by that point.
Well, you mentioned, Gordon, you mentioned the rotation there. A couple of people texting in, too, and I guess we should ask the question. What's the word on Jason Hamill, and what does his injury, if it is a little bit longer term than, you know, missing the break and reshuffling the rotation afterward, yeah, how does that affect what the Cubs look at?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It is.
We expect to know more when we get to the ballpark. But the way he described that injury the other day, they told us it was hamstring tightness, but the way he described the sharp pain in the back of his knee on one particular pitch,
yeah,
and the way that he couldn't stretch it out, and every time he threw another pitch, the pain got worse and worse, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound like hamstring tightness. That sounds like a DL. And if that's the case, you know, obviously the first thing, you just hope that it's treatable and it's shorter than longer. But they couldn't. This is the one area they couldn't afford to really get an injury, unless, you know. And I don't want to completely disparage the guy, unless it's, you know, WADA or somebody, because he's a second choice at the back end anyway. But this guy had been for most of the season your best starter, and so to lose him in an area with no depth and that is so critically important to what they're trying to do, you might have kind of gone back and forth and thought, yeah, we have choices here. We don't have to go all in. We don't have to push real hard. Now, if you don't want this thing, if you want to give this thing the best chance to even tread water, you got to really think hard about trading a good prospect and maybe going to ownership and saying, okay, do we have a little more to work with here? Can we bring on a salary if it means not giving up a top prospect? Because they're going to have to get a pitcher. And I was told yesterday by some people in the business that it seems like these people outside the organization, but their impression, including one team that would be a fit, is that they've already stepped up some of the activity looking, and they were already looking pretty hard for one.
Are they taking calls on Starlin or making calls on Starlin?
Would you?
Yes.
What would you replace him with?
Addison.
What's Addison hitting?
I know what he's hitting, but
I love Addison Russell. I love his approach to the game. I think long term he's going to be fine. Has he proven he's a big league hitter yet?
No, he hasn't, Gordon. But you've got.
Do you have aspirations to at least make the wild card this year?
So are you saying that Starlin's an untouchable right now? Because
I'm not saying he's untouchable. Because you look long term, but I'm saying you don't have that many guys that do much for your lineup. You've got two guys up at the top in Bryant and Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
Soler is a presence that has to be respected, and he's still got a lot to prove at the big league level. You've got Montero when he's in there as a nice left-handed bat. Dexter Fowler's having the worst season of his career. And you think that'll turn around, but it hasn't. We're more than halfway through. So, I mean, where are your Where are your bats? Starlin's had, what, three or four walk-off hits this year? And by the way, since he made that boneheaded move in Minnesota,
awful,
he has played some pretty good defense out there.
And he also stood at the plate and watched a ball fall an inch foul. That was impressive.
He did, and I'm not going to sit here and make apologies for dumb things like that, but he's certainly not the only one in the game that does that, and there are things in the game that he does better than others, especially at the position he plays. And I think that right now, short term, you don't have a real good option to replace him with. And by the way, once you replace him with Addison Russell, who do you replace Addison Russell with?
Javi Baez when he gets healthy.
He's not healthy, and when he was in the big leagues, he couldn't hit. And the last report I heard when he was in the minors was the one thing they were concerned about, even as he started putting up numbers, was he wasn't catching up to fastballs as he was making the adjustments.
Yeah, it's never a good thing, Gordon, when Chris Coughlin and his BABIP luck is the pivot point in this offense.
About Coughlin. Coughlin's a nice left-handed bat you can plug in there too.
And that's about as far as you can go with the praise for Chris Coughlin. You know, I mean, it makes what you're looking for in the rotation harder to find when you've also got to find yourself a bat, whether that's something in the outfield or, you know, however you want to move things around. Maybe Chris Bryant to left field is something you got to look at to make yourself more flexible.
Well, but I agree. And then who do you plug in?
Well, I'm just saying if you were to make a move, you know, and that does happen to be a third baseman or whatever, maybe Chris is somebody who just moves to a different spot for a little while.
I agree, and I think long term, there's at least as good a chance as not of that happening.
Yeah.
But you know, here, look at this. You know, we talked about can they bring on payroll, but who do they have to trade that's going to really entice somebody to let go of a good player? Who's not Kyle Schwarber or Addison Russell?
Dan Vogelbach is the name that we talked about yesterday.
Dan Vogelbach is a DH.
Yes, and so it has to be shipped
to
an AL team.
Teams in baseball.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And he hasn't played a day in the big leagues either. Last I checked, he's a double A.
Yes.
So, he's a nice. He's really having a really nice season.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he's not a proven guy. He used to be rated higher than he is now in terms of all the Baseball Prospectus and Baseball America rankings. So a little bit of luster is off of him, off of his bat, and he can't play a position. So he's a guy that might complete a trade package that might round it out and put it over the top. There's no way you build a trade package around him.
That's true.
You're right. Gordon, we love you. We're up against it. We'll see you at the ballpark later today, and always appreciate the time, my
friend.
Thanks,
Gordon.
All right, guys, take it easy.
There goes Gordon Whittenmeyer at GD Cub. When's the last time you bought a new pillow? Time to upgrade. If you don't have a MyPillow, then you don't have the guaranteed most comfortable pillow out there. MyPillow is recommended by the National Sleep Foundation, and you've been hearing, of course, Cap praising the product for a long, long time. Now it's time for you to get one. Why are they so great? MyPillow, 4 support levels conforming to your preferred shape. They even create a cooling effect throughout the night, keeping your head cool and comfortable. See why they've sold over 5 million on top of that 10-year guaranteed warranty. MyPillow is so confident that you'll love it, they'll give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. Sleep on it. If you're not happy, they'll refund 100% of the purchase price, but you will love it. Act this week, and MyPillow will give you 50% off all the products. Use promo code CAP. Log on to MyPillow.com, use that promo code CAP, or call 800-299-5854, 800-299-5844. Promo code CAP for 50% off.
We will take a couple of phone calls when we get back. Larry, John, Gary, and Phil, hang in there. We'll get to you on the other side of a quick break. He's Mark Carmen. I'm Connor McKnight. This is the Cap and Hoss Show on CSN and WGNplus.com.
More Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus.
Welcome back to the Cap and Haw Show. I'm Connor McKnight. He is Mark Carmen filling in. Lovely to be here. Of course, you know always the Cap and Haw Show brought to you by Horowitz and Associates. It's Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. They won the largest verdict for a brain injury in Illinois history, the largest verdict for a back injury in Illinois history, and then the largest verdict for a neck injury in Illinois history. It's the triple crown of lawyering, Carm.
That's what I'm talking about.
They're like a regular American Pharaoh, Horowitz, Horowitz and Associates. These guys just win suits is what they do. Ball games, too, actually. They're a hell of a softball team. Horowitz, Horowitz and Associates. Take a couple phone calls here. 312-235-2525 is the phone number. A couple of people have been hanging on for a little bit of while. In Indiana, it's John. What's up, John?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, my friend. You're on the Captain Hall Show.
Yeah, I had a possible trade here before the deadline. I think they could use a bat, and they could use a starting pitcher.
You talking about the Cubs or the White Sox? Cubs, right?
The Cubs.
All right, lay it on us, John. What do you got?
Okay, I'm going after Ben Zobrist and Scott Kazmir.
Sure, of the A's. Ben Zobrist, the guy who's been in a couple of talks already, and Kazmir, a rental guy.
Didn't Kazmir get hurt yesterday, 2 days ago?
I would see how he's going to be before I'd make the trade, certainly. But, yeah. But anyway, I'm giving up three guys that I think you could give up and it wouldn't hurt you too bad. The main guy is Javier Baez. I think with the emergence of Addison Russell that Baez could go.
All right, who else you got moving?
I've got Alcantara.
Sure.
And I've got Dan Vogelbach.
Vogelbach. John, appreciate the phone call, my friend. Here's the thought on Scott Kazmir. If healthy, and yeah, check out the, you know, where you're at there. I think Billy Bean's gonna want more. I think he's gonna want major league ready.
That's not enough what he just threw out there.
I don't think it's enough for you. And I think Ben Zobrist is gonna be more expensive than that too. And I think Cubs fans are, and John's right to look at, or probably right anyway, to look at Javi Baez and Arismendi Alcantara and Dan Vogelbach as guys who could be on the move. But as we were talking with Gordon Whitmire of the Sun-Times just in the last segment, those are add-on guys, not throw-in guys. They're not meaningless, but they're add-in guys to a bigger package if you're going after talent like that. That isn't necessarily... None of them centerpieces to your deal. Javi Baez is hurt. Dan Vogelbach, a little bit of a hamstring thing, but like Gordon said, the luster's off that bat a little bit, and he can only play one spot, which makes sense in the AL talk. And Alcantara's, you know, a little bit of a worry too there.
Yeah, if somebody wants to take a flyer on Alcantara, that's makes sense for someone, but he's not acceptable. He's not bringing you anything. He's the last guy. He's talking about Vogelbach. You're not going to build a package around him. You're certainly not enticing him. Hey, we've got Alcantara for you. Does that excite you? No, the answer to that is no. Gordon's stuff on the finances.
Just because I've looked up a number here real quick pertinent to the discussion. Alcantara in the minors so far at Iowa, AAA, oof, boy, hitting .249. On base, .308, and only slugging .446. Yeah, it's been a rough go.
So he's worth nothing.
Yeah,
okay.
Been a rough go. Right. I wouldn't say nothing, but definitely he might be throw-in at this point.
Right. And listen, Alcantara to me is a guy that fits okay on probably any roster as your 24th with
I think he's
guy.
Worth keeping around. Yeah, the positional versatility, if nothing else, I think he's worth keeping around.
Right. He can play you some outfield, he can play you some infield, and a left-handed bat too. All right, we quick timeout here. Scott Merkin's coming up at about 10:40. We got a little more...
We can get a phone call or two. Squeeze a phone call after a break.
Yes, and I want to follow up too on the money stuff that Gordon's talking
about. Oh, absolutely.
About, and how that's... When a Cub fan hears that you got debt and this and that and... The Theo and Jed are squirreling away dough so they can pay here because you know, it's a lot of the, it's
Theo
not what you
Jed,
want to hear.
You're worried that Theo and Jed have like stacks of cash hidden under their my pillows. Is that what you're worried about?
Well, I'm worried that they. I'm not worried, but the fact that they have to do that it just shows there's a lot of creativity going on over there.
You know, even if you do have a stack of cash under the my pillow, you wouldn't even be able to feel it. That's how good those pillows are. You wouldn't even know it's there. CSN Chicago will be the only network in town with all of the crosstown games this weekend. Did you know that? All of them.
That's amazing.
Crosstown Cup coverage starts today with the pregame live at 2, first pitch just after 3. Then you get Sportsnet Central tonight at 6:30. You also, Carm, have the Chicago Fire versus the Seattle Sounders tomorrow at 7 on CSN. The Spanish broadcast will be available on CSN Plus. The CSN Chicago will re-airing each Stanley Cup playoff victory. That's starting this Sunday at 7 with the Nashville series. Oh, the Nashville series. I don't know if I want to relive a lot of that.
Scott Darling, well, come on down. I might go to the fire on Saturday night. Fired up.
You visit csnchicago.com for complete listings. This is the Cap and Haw Show. He's Mark Carman. I'm Connor McKnight. Back to the phone lines, and Scott Merkin joins us at 10:40 to talk a little White Sox side of things live here on CSN Chicago and on WGNplus.com.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago. If you love like that, blood run, cause baby, we got bad blood. You know it used to be bad love, so take a look what you've done, cause baby, now we got bad blood.
Welcome back to the Cap and Haw Show. I'm Connor McKnight, he's Mark Carman. We are all of us here on the Cap and Haw Show this morning, Taylor Swift fans. We took an official poll, straw poll, everybody. We're in on the Taylor Swift thing. The 1989 album, the whole deal.
You can go to the Cap and Haw Twitter account, at Cap and Haw, or if you want to personalize and go to at the Carm, you could check out.
Because the man needs an article.
Right. We had a great pre-show dance today. Connor, you really.
We did. We fired it up.
You led the charge this morning.
Well, you had something in your ear. You had an earbug, some song, and we couldn't think of what it was. And I had a different song has been stuck with me for about 3 days. It won't go away. It's Style by Taylor Swift. It is wonderful. And it's a great pump-up song. It really gets you moving. Different kind of mood, though, now. This is, I don't know if you've seen this just come out. It's just popping up on Twitter. Mark Cuban, Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, has now written the letter, as it were, to Mavericks fans. I would say that there's bad blood. It's between Mavericks owner Mark Cuban and DeAndre Jordan, DeAndre Jordan's agent.
There should be bad blood.
The Clippers, probably. You know, the one guy who doesn't have any bad blood at all is Wes Matthews.
Like Wes Matthews.
His contract went from 4 years and 51, I think. It's 4 years, 51, and it blew up to 4 years and 70 because DeAndre Jordan is going back to the Clippers.
They gave him a raise? I didn't even see that.
It was a max deal. It was an explosion thing. So it was I guess it's essentially a ratio deal.
Interesting.
You know, a percentage of salary cap, so they had to hold some back to get DeAndre Jordan. Anyway, what I hoped that I could do is read the letter.
Please.
That Mark Cuban wrote to fans.
Is it going to get people emotional?
Do you mind if we just, I thought maybe we could find something, Mike Jacobson on the other side of the glass here, maybe we could find something that fits the mood. This is just reading through this quickly, this is a honest, somewhat upset, and I think sad and wistful Mark Cuban writing to Mavs fans this morning.
I bet you Mike Jacobson, the Jackal himself, has got something perfectly appropriate.
So I thought we could do is put this down and react as you feel is appropriate.
Okay.
Fellas. So Mark Cuban. Dear Mavs fans, after all the nonsense coming from an ESPN employee on Twitter, I thought I would provide the events of the day on Tuesday.
Like that he didn't even name Chris Broussard.
Tuesday's not capitalized. Through all of Monday, we were texting back and forth, discussing players available, the amount of cap room we had left, who our staff liked, who he liked, how excited he was. Then on Tuesday, this one is capitalized, the communications basically stopped. We started hearing rumblings from multiple people that something was up. So I flew down to Houston. Flew is misspelled.
How do you spell flew?
L-F-E-W.
Typo, okay.
Yeah, clearly typo.
If he had gone F-L-U, then okay.
Then there's a problem. So I flew down to Houston. Got a room at the Galleria, which is just a few minutes from his house.
I know it well.
It's a nice place.
So does the Jackal.
I had my driver take me to his house. It's inside a small gated community, but the gate was wide open, so we drove in, and I literally walked up to his door. There was no one home. So I texted him, saying that I was there. I know something's up. Let's talk. He texted me that he was on a date. I told him to have fun. I wasn't in a rush, that I was happy to come by there and say hi, or if he wanted to make the date fun, take them to Dallas for a night out. He didn't respond.
Oof.
After about 10 minutes, I went back to the hotel. I wasn't going to sit in front of the house. I didn't think that was right. When I got back to the hotel, I texted him that I wasn't in front of his house. Have fun on the date and we will talk. He hit me back immediately, saying thanks.
That was nice of him.
He knew I was in town. He knew I was close by. I knew something was up. I was getting the same reports everyone else was. I also knew his agents were coming to town. It made sense that he would talk to them. And worst case, even if he was having second thoughts, the agent would be able to give me updates. Like any big career move, it's natural to have second thoughts. So while I was concerned, I still wasn't worried.
You are really speaking
so I went
from
to
the,
bed.
You're speaking from the heart, Mark.
Sorry. There's more to come. There's more to come. He's not finished. He's still tweeting. We need a longer bed. There's more notes.
Keep going.
There's more news. Well, it's not out yet. He hasn't written it yet.
Oh, that's it?
No, this is amazing. This is fantastic. This is like, these are like real live updates into the sad, upset, disturbed Mark Cuban right now. This is amazing stuff. This is literally a developing emotional story. This is... Are you all right? I'm fine. Are you killed?
The music took me to a place that I didn't think I would get to.
It transported me. It really did. It's amazing stuff by our guy.
It set it off pretty good.
It was wonderful stuff.
It did. It was. It filled my heart with a flutter.
We'll find you more.
The guy, though.
We'll find you more as it comes in. Mark Cuban apparently still not done writing. And he was. So when I. Just to give you the visual of this, when I checked it on Twitter, it looked like this was going to be an official type thing. This is just Mark Cuban typing. There's typos all over the place. I'm not picking on the guy. I only mention that because he's doing it live. He's giving this to you as he's not running this by a press secretary or a PR guy, although the PR guys with the Mavs probably wish he would. It's insane.
It's the essence of Mark Cuban. In the here and the now and the realness. Which is one of the reasons why I always wanted that guy in this town as an owner. Be it as if he wanted to own the Cubs, would have taken him all day.
You want that, didn't you? I kind of did too at the time. I had no problem with Mark Cuban owning something in this town.
Just got so much dough and he's got so much want and he's entertaining. I know that it doesn't fit well with the old, good old boy baseball.
No. Oh, God, not at all.
They can't stand him.
You think Jerry Reinsdorf and Mark Cuban would sit in a meeting together?
They probably would not see eye to eye. But I think Jerry eventually would come around. So, you know, you're initially scared of something that you don't know particularly well. I'd take Cuban here all day long. I'd also take Chandler Parsons here, who had great comments. Honest, going right at DeAndre Jordan, who deserved it. He said, quote, "This is something that I've never seen in my career, and I know that it doesn't happen very often. When a man gives you his word and an organization his word, especially when that organization put in so much effort, and I walked him through the process, he was very, very open and willing to work with him. It's just very unethical and disrespectful."
Mm.
And boom. Roasted.
Yeah, and then he proceeds to talk about how he was worried. Or here's the exact quote. I shouldn't paraphrase it. "He wasn't ready to be a franchise player. He was scared.
Oh!
He was scared to take the next step in his career. There was no other reason other than he was uncomfortable and he has friendships there." That's actually two reasons, but we get the point. "How you make a business decision like that is beyond me. How you ignore an owner like Mark, who is in your hometown just waiting for a chance to talk to you, is beyond me. I don't think he made a mistake. I think he'll be good in L.A. He's got a good team. He's got a great point guard. He's got Blake. But I think he could have been a superstar in Dallas. He could have been the man in Dallas. Never in a million years did I think this was even a possibility."
I will be really interested, and I don't know if it's when it's ever going to come out, to know what got said to DeAndre Jordan by whom that made him flip so quickly. Because, I mean, yeah, it's a couple of days, but really this is a – this is a quick turn when you look at what's involved here, when you look at the dollars, the future involved. What got said?
See, I think Parsons hit it right on the head. He fully became fearful. There was a ton of anxiety around it, and instead of moving towards the fear because it was exciting and that's what you should do and ride it all the way down to Dallas and maybe ride it into being a number one guy, he's like, "Oh no, I'm scared. My friends, LA, I'm comfortable. I get rebounds. I don't care that I shoot 40% from the free throw line. I can even make more money here too, and the weather is better. I'm going to stay."
So how much does that all, because he doesn't get along with Chris Paul. I mean, that's the other side of this. I mean, I guess you put things away, you know, when you're on the court and you're able to work together. There have been plenty of combinations in the NBA who hated each other and got along fine and lied. I mean, that it happens. But even those two, I mean, you could go on Twitter or check Vines and watch Chris Paul screaming at DeAndre Jordan last year. screaming at him.
And now they'll be on a banana boat in the Pacific, just apparently, like D-Wade.
Just cruising around.
LeBron and Chris Paul and throwing Carmelo. They're all having wine. Wine?
It looked like a good glass of red.
It
so
did.
It looked, you know, something nice. And I'm going to take a page from Chris Paul's emoji book. And as soon as I am, you know, because when he was on his way, he tweeted banana boat. That was the emojis. They were the bananas and then the boat. I'm going to start doing that whenever I'm on my way somewhere. Whenever I'm headed, instead of on my way or anything like that, I'm going to start tweeting banana boat.
Well, we emojied last night. I don't have emojis, but I took whatever. What did I send you? What would you call those?
That was just the emoticon, I guess.
Okay.
Those are just the symbols put together to make a smiley face.
It was a big moment for us.
I just mashed a bunch of emojis and sent them to you.
I felt good about it. I slept well. Cap and Haw brought to you by Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. They won the largest verdict for a brain injury in Illinois history, the largest verdict for a back injury in Illinois history, and the largest verdict for a neck injury in Illinois history. That is the triple crown of lawyering. Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates, these guys win. Scott Merkin has been backed up to about 10:50, so we will get to him in a matter of moments, I guess a matter of 10 minute moments. We will do some Jimmy Butler. Does that make any sense?
No, not at all, but I know what you're talking about.
I think we're all together, right?
Yes. Right. Yes, we are. I mean, as one.
Cuban has a typo. I can't speak. Butler's in San Diego. Gar Forman was laughing hysterically, which...
Can we just play that for about 10 minutes? Let's do that.
We can play it a little bit. Cap and Haw, Comcast Sportsnet, WGNplus.com.
It's the Cap and Haw Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
Jimmy.
What? Sounded like tears for a second there.
Who? What happened to him?
You know, I'm not sure. Just bizarre.
It's a little too bury the dead too soon here for me. Can't be having the general manager diabolically laughing at the coach he just fired a month ago, who's the all-time winningest coach fastest to 100 in Bulls history.
What are you saying? Jimmy should have shown up with a black armband on or something? You know, still in mourning?
Well, I think Jimmy brought him up. He got Tibbs into his press conference.
It's true.
But then Friedel was like, who? Just flat out, just like, we don't even remember the second best coach in Bulls history, Nick Friedel, my guy.
What do you think is a fonder thing for Jimmy to think of? The good times he had with Tibbs or the fact that he won't have to run 48 minutes in a 48-minute game anymore?
He
doesn't have to, you know, put that kind of stress on his feet, ankles.
I did see Jimmy knees. Butler many times at his locker. How are you feeling, Jimmy, after the game?
Dead. I feel dead.
I'm exhausted.
I feel absolutely dead.
And that did happen, legit. Just laid back 48 minutes again, or 42, whatever it was. But, yeah, that's your guy, Jimmy Butler, who's going to
That's insane. That's some sort of diabolical mustache-twisting laugh going on right there. That is Gar Forman. And at the end, too, it's like he wasn't listening to the beginning of the joke and then realized everyone else was laughing. You know, like that every, you know, you're hanging out with your friends and you don't quite get what everybody else is talking about, or maybe you weren't there and then you just kind of laugh to fit in. I don't know. Very strange.
Perhaps he, in the past, was feeling some serious heat about getting rid of Tom Thibodeau, and then there was this moment where we were kind of I wouldn't call it Tibbs bashing, but there was at least fun being had, and he was, like, relieved that he could jump in there.
Yeah.
Does that sound about accurate?
No, it sounds exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking through, checking out a bunch of the big websites, the Mothership, SI, all that kind of stuff, for more of the Mark Cuban letter, and everybody's just got it up to the point where we read it with the bed. It's a cliffhanger. Mark Cuban is writing his own cliffhanger saga right now. I mean, this is act one. You know, act one was he was there, he texted him, he thinks he's on the date, he's a little worried, have second thoughts, but he just went to bed. Just went to bed that night, on Tuesday night. I'm on pins and needles. I can't wait to find out next what Mark Cuban was doing. And what the interaction was. Is this not? This is crazy to me. What if this had gone on during the Boozer stuff? You know, when he was leaving, because we talked about it yesterday a little bit, when he was leaving Cleveland to go to Utah, right? Yeah, Utah. If Twitter had been around for this, do you think it would have been as big of a situation? Do you think it would have been as big a deal at that point?
No.
Because Boozer wasn't, I mean, DeAndre Jordan has his faults, you know, because what's the Charles Barkley line? You leave him in the gym for an hour and a half, tell him he can't dunk, he'd come out with 6 points the next morning, something like that. I mean, he said that for Blake Griffin, too, a couple of years back.
He said that for a handful of bigs. I love Charles.
It's a go-to for him. He's just going to the well.
He should have to do baseball during the summertime, just something. There's something that just came across Twitter. I'm slightly distracted because if you ever went to a Bulls game as part of the media, and I know that's not necessarily true for anybody, because, right, most people don't do this, but Sabrina was the queen of the Bulls media for over 20 years, and it's coming across that she's retiring.
No way.
Yeah, Sabrina Beyer. I think it's Beyer, B-E-Y-E-R. I just always called her Sabrina. I hope I'm not butchering her last name, but one of the nicest, kindest.
Wow, yeah.
So there's Sam Smith's got a piece at Bulls.com, and I just saw it on the Twittersphere that Sabrina is calling it a career, and of course Tim Hallam has been there the longest by far.
Sure.
You know, he's been there since Jerry Sloan was running around, seemingly. But Sabrina, 20 plus years dealing with a tremendously weird lot of people. The media.
I mean, that's 95, right?
She had
right in the thick of it.
Yeah, she had a baby this year, so she missed some time, and now calling it a career, which, you know, when you're a mom and you're working late nights, that probably gets to be pretty challenging. So no longer. So now it's all up to Matt Yobe and Sean Hickenbottom, and
two capable guys, though.
Of course,
no worries there.
Of course, they'll be fine. But Sabrina was awesome. So
well, congratulations to her. Then that's fantastic.
Yes, good job moving along, and I'm sure she'll be coming to Bulls games herself. She probably has a way to get tickets or two. Maybe knows Joe O'Neill.
Can I bring you back to the Chandler Parsons
Please.
Part of this situation real quickly? Chandler Parsons is, and I know you were a little bit bigger on Chandler Parsons, even in last year's deadline. I think we were talking about a couple of things with Chandler Parsons and the Bulls, I think, at times. Or maybe this was during the offseason.
I like Chandler.
I know you do. Do you ever expect Chandler Parsons to be Mr. Recruiter? Do you ever expect that guy to be out there the way he was? And I'm not even talking about, let's put aside his whole, I've never seen that, I feel double-crossed, I've never seen this before in my career. Let's put that aside. Let's just talk about the recruiting efforts first. Why Chandler Parsons?
Well, he is one of those guys that in the locker room after a tough loss and no one wants to speak, Chandler Parsons is a guy you can always go to. Very professional. So that makes sense from that standpoint. Now his talents on the court are not over the top.
This isn't the first time. Mike brought up a great point. Chandler Parsons was a big factor in recruiting Dwight Howard, right?
He's a likable Chandler Parsons.
He's a handsome guy, let's be honest. I mean, I don't know if that factors in, if you're just looking at the good face and wanting, you know, that guy to pitch you. But you're right. I mean, we always thought that the star, the big numbers, the guys who put up, you know, big-time numbers were your recruiters. And in 2014, 2015, 33 minutes a game, 15 a game, points per game. I mean, that's not all bad.
No, it's good.
66 games played. But Chandler Parsons, of all people, is going to be your guy. That's, you know, kudos to him.
You have something in common with Chandler Parsons, Connor.
What's that?
Not to blow you up. But see, Chandler Parsons, what I appreciate about him.
Chandler goes 6'9", 227. I don't have much in common with that.
Well, you are both white and tall, so there is that. And you're
probably hang up at the three-point line too much. Chandler doesn't do that. He'll bang down there a little bit.
No, your games are somewhat similar, although he's got a little bit more range on the jump shot, and perhaps
far more range.
And can get off the ground.
That doesn't stop me from hanging out by the three-point line and just jacking threes. I'm that guy. You don't want to play pickup with me. I'm terrible.
But something for real that I respect about Chandler, and it's kind of what he's talking about DeAndre Jordan, the reason why he left Houston with Harden and Dwight Howard is he wanted to kind of be more of the guy. He wanted to stamp himself as, you know, a number two guy on a team and not a three. And rather than jumping on the best team going, he went for, you know, I want to grow myself as big as possible. You, if I can blow you up here, you had an opportunity in your radio career where you could have stayed and not gone for something, and you chose to go for something. So there is there's a certain little respect that I have for that. I like people that go for it big and not, I'm going to jump on this team where it's that comfortable and I can hold up this ring like I did something. No, you want to be a major player in it. I appreciate that.
You make an interesting point because there comes a point, at least I think for most people, there comes a point in your career, whether, you know, regardless of what you're working at, that taking a swing, you know, taking a home run cut makes sense. You know, where it's a really easy decision to say, yeah, there's risk involved here, but you got to take this cut. And for DeAndre Jordan, I don't know that it was ever all that clear because of what the Clippers still had. You know, because of what Chris Paul, and let's just talk, you know, an X's and O's basis at this point. Yes, they don't get along all that well, but for what Chris Paul brings to you on that court, for what Blake Griffin can do for you there, I mean, there's still, for what Doc Rivers can do for you there too, there's still a huge draw. You know, it's not like you had clearly come to the end of a rope on that Clippers squad. There was still more to do. And yeah, the West is tough, but he wasn't getting out of the West with the Mavericks. So, you know, to make that swing, I don't think was as clear for DeAndre Jordan.
And that's all fine. If his decision at the start was, I want to be a Clipper because I have the best chance to win and he's a huge part of the team. That's all fine. But then don't do what you did. Don't just sign with the Clippers.
Yeah.
If he hadn't done the whole...
The wish-wash thing.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah, fence sitting. That's what you hate.
You could have said to him at the time, hey, I'm signing with you, but I want to be more a part of this offense. I can give you more. I think it'll help us get over the top. It's going to be great for me. It's going to be great for you. Those are all fair conversations. But, you know, man of your word, at least somewhat of your word. If he had even called Mark Cuban, who's writing letters...
Instead of telling him he was on a date.
And apologized, that'd be fine. But cowering in the corner like you're a six-year-old who can't pick up the phone... Mommy, Daddy, don't punish me. Come on, DeAndre Jordan.
I can't wait for part two of the Cuban letter. I also can't wait. CSN Chicago will be the only network in town with all crosstown games this weekend. The Crosstown Cup coverage starts today. The pregame is live at 2 o'clock, and the first pitch is just after 3. Sportsnet Central tonight at 6:30. You can also... catch the Chicago Fire and Seattle Sounders. That's tomorrow at 7 o'clock on CSN. The Spanish broadcast is available on CSN Plus. Also, as if that's not enough, CSN Chicago will be re-airing each Stanley Cup playoff victory starting this Sunday at 7 with the Nashville series. Visit csnchicago.com for complete listings. He's Mark Carman. I'm Connor McKnight. We're filling in for Cap and Haw today. Scott Merkin, we're going to talk a little White Sox with Scott Merkin of MLB.com coming up next, right here on CSN and WGNplus.com.